Want to be a part of the conversation? Then let us know on the TNT Radio Interactive Live chat room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's news talk, TNT Radio. Thanks for listening and being part of the George Christensen Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back, dear friend, to another episode of the George Christensen Show here on TNT Radio, the global voice for freedom, which you can obviously find online at tntradio.live. And I'm George Christensen, former Australian politician, editor of Nation First, and host of the show, obviously, that bears my name. This Sunday, we've got a fantastic lineup of guests. First of all, joining me will be Bishop Gregory Scully. He's a Western Orthodox bishop. You may have actually seen him. He features in an Australian TV show called Outback Opal Hunters. He's the priest or the bishop in that show that goes around blowing up reserves to try and find some opals that he'll put to good use in his ministry and mission. So we're going to be talking to him because he's a good friend of mine, a great patriot. He's got a lot of sound, common sense views, and I think you will enjoy hearing from Gregory Scully in just a moment. We're going to be joined after Bishop Gregory by Senator Alex Antic, that fantastic senator from South Australia, who is just firing on all cylinders on a range of issues. He is pro-freedom, he is pro-life, he is pro-family, he's not afraid to call out stupidity when he sees it in Canberra, and I've got to tell you, there's a lot of it that goes on there. And then we're going to also be joined by the LNP's worst nightmare at the moment, a fellow by the name of Barclay McGain. He is a young policy researcher. He's actually a former staffer for the Liberal National Party. He was once the chairman of their Gold Coast youth branch, and now he actually works for the Australian Taxpayers Alliance. But the LNP seems to be terrified of him and sending him all sorts of letters. We're going to talk a bit about that later on in the show. But firstly, as I've said, we're going to be talking with Western Orthodox Bishop Gregory Scully, who is on the road at the moment, driving throughout rural out New South Wales, I think. How are you going? And I hope that Telstra is holding up at its end of the bargain, and it will for the next hour. Bishop Gregory, how are you?
You're good to hear from you, George. I'm doing well. How are you, and how's the family?
Well, we're all going very well, mate. We're all going very well. Now, people might not know about you, although you can jump on YouTube or many other little online video programs and actually watch you in the Outback Opal Hunters series. But for the uninitiated, tell us just a little bit about who Bishop Gregory Scully is.
Bishop Gregory Scully is an Aussie through and through. The first Scully was on the first fleet, HMS Sirius.
Wow.
Henry Scully was a free man, and he was a Marine for the English Crown. So full-on Aussie, love my country, love our people, love our Indigenous people, and I'd like to see the country be positive and go forward.
That's fantastic. Now, you started off, you ended up in Orthodoxy. You started off in a Pentecostal church, is that right? You were a minister in a Pentecostal church, or just a layperson, Bishop Gregory?
Not quite. I went to theological college with an evangelical Wesleyan Methodist.
That's
church.
Right. Apologies.
I grew up an Anglican, Sydney Anglican, in my youth, and as an adult, I went to study Bachelor of Theology at a Wesleyan Methodist college in Melbourne. And then did further studies at a Orthodox college in Sydney.
And is that where you caught the Orthodox bug?
I caught the Orthodox bug at the Protestant college while studying the early church fathers. There was only two of us in the whole college history that had studied them.
Interesting. And, that is one of the big revelations of Christianity. I kind of liken it, the Bible is of utmost importance, of course. But when you add into it the early church fathers to find out exactly what those first Christians were doing, what they were believing, how they were interpreting the Bible, it is like taking it from Technicolor to HD. Everything just becomes a little bit more brilliant in the light of that. But you went on to be a Coptic Orthodox priest. Am I right?
That's correct. First one ordained in Australia who wasn't an Egyptian.
There you go. How did that come about? Because that is quite a weird avenue to go down for an Aussie to decide that he was going to join what most people would see as a foreign church, an Egyptian church, as you've sort of alluded to.
Well, that's correct. I was a student at the Wesleyan College in Melbourne, and my eyes were set upon an Orthodox priest who visited that college to do a counselling course, and I so much wanted to meet him because I had studied the Church Fathers in the college. And I remember looking out my kitchen window, I was a full-on evangelical, and I said at the time, I want to go and say hello, but I can't call him Father because the Bible says not to call anyone Father. Oh, the irony.
Yeah, well, so you've gone on, though, that there were, and we won't go down this this avenue, but obviously there were a few issues that you had with the Coptic Orthodox church that you belong to. I know that there was a bit of corruption. We won't go into that particular episode for legal reasons, but you left that, and now you've done something very interesting. You've basically thrown off the shackles of the sort of ethno-nationalism that sometimes these Orthodox churches succumb to, and you've said, I'm a Western Orthodox bishop.
That's correct.
In a Western Australian Orthodox church. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we remember as Anglicans or former Anglicans or Anglo-Saxon, if you want, Caucasians, that England was Orthodox till 1054. I mean, the reason William the Conqueror was given permission to invade England in 1066 is because England had supported the four other patriarchates at the split in 1054. So our heritage is actually Orthodox. Patrick of Ireland was Orthodox. And
that's right.
The ancient church, both in the early years and in the English church, was well and truly established and established on the ancient faith that came from the apostles. And so all I saw was that the ethnic nature of Orthodoxy in the West is the only option for most people. And I understand that. But when you enter into the clergy, other options open up to you. And there are various bishops and priests across the country, across the world, who are establishing small, some of them large, Orthodox Western missions. So I joined myself to that movement again.
Well, those people who aren't Orthodox, and I'm not trying to do any sort of conversion or proselytism here, but, you know, it is something. We talk regularly, actually, to an Orthodox priest on this show over in the United States. So listeners know a little bit about Orthodoxy, but can you, as a bishop, sum up what Orthodoxy is and how it might differentiate, I suppose, from other forms of Christianity, particularly evangelical Christianity?
So Orthodox means straight path or true glory. The word orthos in the Greek, we get, you know, orthopedic surgeon or orthodontist. So orthos means straight, and dox comes from doxa, Greek, meaning glory or worship of God. Orthodox is the straight or true worship of God. The Orthodox see it in the statement in the scriptures that the time is coming when they will worship the Father in spirit and in truth. And in that statement, the words orthos and doxa are within there. Orthodox is not a denomination. It sees itself, if you're Eastern Orthodox, as the church. I don't want to shy away from that. The Western Orthodox rather see in the apostolic succession of the bishops, those adhering to the ancient Orthodox faith are part of the communion of the Western Orthodox Church.
Mm. So let's go from the religion, because this is a bit quirky. You featured on this reality TV series, and I It's probably an offensive thing to say to some people that you're on a reality TV show, but it's more of a educational docudrama or something like that, I guess we could call it. Outback Opal Hunters, how did you get involved in that? And tell us what sort of role you play on that show there, because it's real life. You're not playing a role, you're actually in that role.
Yeah, that's correct. I was 5 years in the desert of South Australia, in the middle of Australia. And I had five years in the desert and living alone. Much of that was underground. Of course, people in Coober Beatty do live underground. I had three various opal claims. Opal mining by hand is a very hard occupation, of course. Many people use heavy machinery, bulldozers or excavators. I used hand tools. So you'd only...
Yeah, right.
The best you could do was a tonne of dirt a day. Big dozers could move 50 tonne a day, you know?
So there's something spiritual involved in you situating yourself in the desert for 5 years?
When I went to Egypt on three visits when I was in the Egyptian church, I had a lot of praise for the men who lived in the desert, some of them isolated, and they had a life of prayer. And I was taught that life. Many of the ancient church people and many of those monastics today actually memorize large portions of the Bible. People don't realize how much the Orthodox love the Holy Bible. We still have monks today that have the whole book of Psalms memorized. They're still alive today in the monastery. That's how much we love the Holy Bible. So this gave me a love for the desert, gave me a love for solitary life. In Australia, there's not many Western Orthodox, and I've come to terms with that. So I sought a peaceful existence in the desert, but God had other plans, and whilst hiding underground, I was recommended to the Discovery Channel and the reality show. And they're real opal miners that they use. They're real opals. They're real explosives. They're real registered claims. And so, you know, I accepted the offer to... They don't pay you big money. They just cover your costs per day. But I accepted when said, would you come on the show, you know? And the rest is history.
Well, there you go. So there must have been a few experiences out there in the outback, you know, in Coober Beatty. I'm sure there'd be a few characters around the place. And obviously, it probably also assisted in you getting to understand Indigenous Australia a bit better being out that way. How did you find Coober Beatty?
That's exactly right. You know, you're right at the coalface there with Indigenous relations, I can tell you now. I got on very well with our Indigenous brothers and sisters. There is a white culture and there is a black culture, there's no doubt about it. They refer to each other as the white fellas and the black fellas. There's nothing negative in that, it's just the way it is. The Aboriginal people don't do a lot of opal mining. They have a spirituality that doesn't like them going underground or into caves. When I say into caves, there's cave paintings, but if you notice, the cave paintings are always very wide, shallow caves where you can see the entrance and the sun. They don't go deep underground because of their spirituality. So, yes, I got to see a lot. I got to know a lot of people, a lot of respect both ways. Many Aboriginal people are Christians. A lot of people don't realise. So the very high percentage are Christian people of Christian faith.
What about some of the people that lived there in Coober Beatty? You must have seen, going away from the Aboriginal folk, there must have been a few characters out that way because, I read somewhere and I just can't remember the exact phrase, but they talked about rogues and rascals being attracted to gem fields and opal fields and gold fields. I bet it had its share of rogues and rascals as well.
Look, they're tough people living in the desert, let me tell you. They are tough. The temperatures get up over 50 degrees in summer, breaking
bloody
rocks.
Hell.
You're working in fields with snakes and scorpions and wild dogs. If you get bit by a snake out there, more often than not, you're more than half an hour from town. And you know, there's no helicopters to come and get you. You really take your life in your hands. They're a tough breed of people, open miners, I'll tell you now. Some of the toughest people I've been around. Respect for that. As for rogues, there's a saying in Cooper Pedy, the only people that come to Cooper, there's a lot of people born there, so this doesn't apply to them. The people who go to Cooper Pedy are either the wanted or the unwanted. I don't know which one I fell into. Well, I wasn't wanted, so I must have been the unwanted.
There you go.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that seek to lose themselves in the deserts of Australia.
Yeah. Well, we certainly want to hear more from you. We will do so after this quick break here on TNT Radio's The George Christensen Show.
TNT Radio's Patrick Henningsen.
The big NATO drill is underway. Air Defender, we're already getting reports of assets being moved around the perimeter of Ukraine. It looks like with the NATO summit coming up in Vilnius, they're planning a big event, ladies and gentlemen. So I'm just telling you straight up right now that something's going to happen. So, I mean, I don't say that casually. I know like people are doing all sorts of provocations online, clickbaiting and so forth. If you look at the history and what's happened over the last couple of months and right back to last summer with Baltops 22, where they wired the Nord Stream with explosives and then blew it a couple of months later. The NATO summit's huge. They know they're losing. They have to show to each other and to themselves and to their respective ministries and their various member state governments that it's not going to be a total massive defeat. So they're going to do something crazy. These people will do anything but negotiate for peace. We are in an insane period of history where these clowns are running clown world governments. They're doubling down on every bad decision they've ever made, just like they have throughout history. It's just that the stakes are even higher today because we're dealing with nuclear weapons.
Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
This is the sound of confidence soaring.
Our mission is to educate, inspire, and honor.
This is the sound of honor roaring.
We should never, never forget those that gave their lives.
This is the sound of a generation rising above.
337 for Bravo Fox Papa.
We want to be involved in the education of young people so that they can take our aircraft and the stories that our pilots tell and realize their own dreams.
The Commemorative Air Force honors the heroes of yesterday while educating and inspiring the heroes of tomorrow.
Your future and how you live your life is dependent on how you think.
You can learn more at soundsofhistory.org right now.
Thanks for listening and being part of the George Christensen Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the George Christensen Show. I'm George Christensen, joined by Western Orthodox Bishop and one of the stars of Outback Opal Hunters, the TV show, Bishop Gregory Scully. Now, we've just heard before the break all about the background of Bishop Gregory. I wanted to get into some of Bishop Gregory's takes on issues currently affecting the nation, but we've actually had a couple of questions that have popped up over the break. One of our listeners wants to know if you're still opal mining, Bishop Gregory. You still dig out the tools and go and chip away for a bit of those opals or what?
The producers sent me in. I was recently in the Philippines in Orthodox Christian Mission for 6 months. I returned and am serving my sister and brother-in-law in Canberra currently. The producers have sent me an email requesting me about this season. I'm yet to answer that email. I'm still pondering the issue, whether to return this season. So it's an open question at the moment, George.
So would you only go back to the opal fields if you were back on the show, or would you be going back to the opal fields anyway?
I love the opal fields. My sister was in hospital and my brother-in-law is blind.
Okay.
So they actually had a need for me to be here. I don't have any churches or service in the Canberra area. So if I'm staying in Australia, I want to return to the desert for sure. And I'll take up mining and the mission that we have there again. It's in God's hands at the moment.
But we might see you back on the Discovery Channel. Is it the ones that do it, right?
Yeah, Discovery, 7, Mate. There's about five channels. It's big in Europe and England, apparently.
So, and there was also a question about you had a medical episode with your foot there. How's that going? One person wanted to know how the foot was going.
Well, a big thank you to the person who was caring enough to ask. I had two toes amputated and the metacarpal in the foot above where that wound was. The wound is now completely healed. 8 months ago, I had the amputations in Adelaide. Emergency, I left it too long, and the surgeons did their amazing work, and we thank God for surgeons. And I'm walking, but with a little bit of a limp.
Very good. Well, I wanted to get in and ask you a few questions about the state of modern Australia from the perspective of a Western Orthodox bishop. Obviously, there has been over many a year an erosion of the faith. Western society, Western civilization used to be almost synonymous with the concept of Christendom, but now it's definitely post-Christian, and in fact, in some quarters, you would say it has become anti-Christian. I'm just wondering how you see it as a Western Orthodox bishop. I mean, your spirituality is very ancient. The Orthodox Church styles itself as going right back to the very beginning. How do you see Western civilization from the point of view of orthodoxy?
I see it now similar to the days when the early church lived amongst the pagan Romans before Constantine, when persecution was elevated, when churches were illegal to have churches, where Christians had to meet underground in catacombs. We know there's catacombs under Rome. We know there's catacombs in Western Turkey, Cappadocia. These exist because Christians had to hide their church services. I see that we're going to lose church buildings. We're going to be sued for properties left, right and centre now. Christian businesses are going to be sued for refusing to serve agendas and sexual proclivities that they don't support. We are back in the days of persecution in the West.
Yeah, and you do see that. I mean, when you have people being dragged out of their own homes in England, you know, for instance, England being the birthplace of, obviously, a Westminster parliamentary democracy, the mother of all parliaments, they call the parliament there in the UK. And yet you see people who post stuff online that really just goes against the current grain, against gender fluidity and all the rest of it, and they get a knock on the door from a police officer and they're dragged out of their house. I've seen videos of pastors in the streets there in the UK. I've actually also seen similar videos in the USA and in Australia who've been arrested for street preaching. And Canada, of course, we've had that evangelical pastor there, Pastor Arthur. I can't remember his last name, but he was arrested for speaking up against the government and its pandemic regime. You're right. We have moved into this era now where, some people who are espousing the Christian faith are taken on by the authorities. Do you think that is going to become more and more, or do you think that what will happen here, that a lot of the churches will water down the faith in order to not confront the authorities or not have the authorities confront them, more to the point?
Well, already what we used to call Christendom already has watered down. We see clearly the division. And the division has existed since I was at Bible College nearly 28 years ago. We see churches that have played lay down misere and accepted the world's practices into their churches. And then we see the churches which have not, and they're the ones clearly that are being persecuted now.
Yeah. So what are Christians to do then in this era, Bishop Gregory? I mean, we're our views are increasingly becoming more and more considered extreme or on the outside, in some cases illegal to espouse or articulate or publish. What are Christians to do in that sort of environment?
The first thing we need to know is that we're outnumbered 4-1. The current statistics of people who affirm a Christian faith in Australia are just over 40%. 10 years ago, they were over 60% in 2011. So, and of those 40% that affirm Christian, that they are Christians, more than half of them are LGBT affirming, gay and lesbian affirming in the marriages and in the churches and in their pastors or priests. So we have to take that 40% who affirm themselves as Christians and divide that in half. And so what we really end up with is about, in my estimation, 20% of Australians, one in five, have any type of conservative Christian belief. And that puts us outnumbered in every realm. I mean, parliaments are going to turn against saying the Lord's Prayer. Courts are going to turn against Christians who affirm a conservative position. Schools, educational institutions, medicine, every aspect of life, this is going to fall over into.
So I just go back to that question. What do you think we are to do about it then?
Well, it's the age of martyrdom again, so you have multiple choices. The early church...
that's pretty rough.
But it's true. It's true. The age of martyrdom is returning, and we see it already in many places of the world. The devil is not killing Western Christians yet in Western countries, perhaps it's not too far away. But everything people own, look at Bernard in Queensland, how many times he's been sued for speaking truth.
Christian Bernard Gaynor. You've been on the show before.
People are going to be sued till they're sued for their last pair of pants. What do you do? If you have assets, you need to protect yourself. Have a spokesman, forgive me, I'm a sinner, but have a spokesman like me who owns nothing, has nothing in the bank. The car I'm sitting in right now, I'm at Sutton Forest between Canberra and Bowral, where I took my sister today. The car isn't even mine. And I fear no arrest. I fear no going to sue me for assets because I don't have any. You know, in the desert, when you get a fine from a court, they don't even take you away because it costs too much to ship you to Adelaide. So they let you do a day's work at the local Indigenous community picking up rubbish. So getting a fine in the desert doesn't even worry even the Indigenous, all the white fellas, because we all just walk around. They even give you a ham sandwich. So what to do? Have spokespeople like the early church did that didn't fear men, that only feared God. And they're the ones that will get arrested. They're the ones that will get sued, and no one will get anything out of it. The Christians in the early church kept their mouth shut. Okay, we don't have, and when the martyrs who were arrested, they gave everyone a serve, okay? When you're in the Colosseum, you give Caesar, St. Paul in front of, you know, the emperor. Okay, if you're under arrest and you're dragged before a court, well, the scriptures say God will give you the words to say. But we don't go out and commit economic suicide. We don't go out and, because of our affirmation of Christian principles, have our children taken off us by the child services. Come on, think smart. Protect ourselves, protect the families, protect your properties. Be very careful. This is what the church did, and get away from them. Get away from them. Don't go in the middle of them and fight them. You don't win. In America, we saw the last 6 months, everyone was up in arms against this child rubbish teaching that they're putting in libraries, right? And it made a lot of sense. But what's happened? They've come back now and they've taken the Bible out of schools because the other side have accused the Bible of, you know, hate speech and various sexual sins in the Old Testament. And so these things will always backfire, and they are backfiring now because people aren't learning from the early church. The Christians shut their mouths. They looked after the babies that the Greeks and the Romans left exposed to die. They go and grab them and bring them up. And, you know, the world was killing babies back then, and we've returned to it. You know, now in Australia, abortion is right up to full term.
Mm. You're not obviously suggesting, and I just want to clarify this, that Christians just shut up and let what's happening happen. What you're saying is that there are roles for some and there are roles for others. One important role is protecting our families. That is probably an ultimate role. But then there are some brave units out there. Sometimes I think that I unfortunately took on this role too, and perhaps still do. You stick your neck out. That's and right. Obviously, when you stick your neck out, someone's going to come with an axe.
Let's look at the shop that refused to bake the cake in America, okay?
Yeah.
You can go through years of being sued. You can go through hundreds of thousands of dollars. You can ultimately win in the Supreme Court. But everyone who knows anything about lawyers knows that it's the process that is the punishment.
Yeah.
Okay? So instead of refusing to bake them a cake with some non-harmful, disgusting-tasting flavour and keep the money for the cake.
Yeah. Put too much bicarb in it.
You ruined our gay wedding. Say, oh, sorry about that. I'll give you $50 for your cake back. They can't sue you. It's just a mistake. Got to think smart. If you refuse, you lose your business.
Yeah,
and I'm not talking anything criminal or illegal. I'm not saying poison, but just put a different flavoured thing that you'd never put in a cake that tastes disgusting, and they'll never come back to you for a second cake.
Well, I probably would have just been too busy that day, but good on the fella that decided to wear his convictions on his sleeve. But you're right, unfortunately...
indeed. Cost people their lives. It can cost them their wives, their families, their houses, their jobs. You know, there are people who should stand up. There should be the bishops and priests and deacons of the church or others that are in a position of safety to be able to protect. You know, people go into these battles and they don't realise that their wives and families are going to be in the firing line straight away, you know?
Yeah, it makes it very difficult, doesn't it?
But in the early church, the bishops, the priests, the presbyters, the elders, they're the ones that stood up and pointed the finger and said, you've got to stop this rubbish.
Is there a role for lay leaders, like non-clergy, to actually take on this role? How does someone discern whether they are in the position to be able to take that courageous stance that others may not be able to?
Of course. Any Christian can stand up. But what they have to do is look at their life and say, this is going to, not could, could, or maybe, this is going to cost everything that I hold, that I have, and is dear to me. And then they go forward and make that decision. If they then say, okay, I risk it all, then so be it. But ultimately, the church has always had people who are in this role ready to step forward. So historically, what would happen? An event was happening, say, in Alexandria in Egypt in the days of Athanasius. Well, St. Anthony from the Holy Mountain, who was a monk, came down to Alexandria two or three times to tear strips off the secular civil government. Okay? So something would happen in Alexandria that the Christians were unhappy with. Word would get up to St. Anthony at the Red Sea, and he'd come down and he'd bore it into them. Now, when persecutions were happening, and under the Arian emperors, they refused to touch Antony, St. Antony. They refused to arrest him because the whole country would go up in arms. And St. Antony used to go to the prisons and comfort the Christians in the jails who were being persecuted. But they never, ever touched him because the whole country would have turned, you see. So, I mean, God has had men and women in this situation since the early church. And this is why we study the church, not just for theology, not just for extra-biblical interpretation, but we study it to know how did they deal with pagan society in the first three centuries. And we can learn so much, George.
That's obviously going to be something we're going to have to turn back to as society and civilization devolve. I think that that is a very, very prescient point. And I just want to be clear here, again, you're not telling people to shut up and just, let what the globalists want wash over them. You're actually saying, no, there is a role for people in protecting...
Media or Facebook post sees that I don't check my face on anything. I speak loud, but I have no fear of being sued. My brother-in-law is a lawyer. I get free legal advice every time someone sends me a letter. And as I said, yes. I have no assets to be sued for. I mean, the first thing a lawyer does is does a property search on you to make sure they're going to get their payment, you know, if they sue you.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. What you're talking about, though, is essentially... Yes, we have to be wise. And what you're talking about, though, is akin to an orthodox writer, Rod Dreher. He wrote a book called The Benedict Option a while ago, which basically says that in this new era, the era that you call martyrdom, this anti-Christian era, which really comes after people who have views around tradition, views around orthodox Christianity, little o orthodox, that uphold that, that there is going to be a place, obviously, for people who are like prophets out there, you know, pointing the finger at what's going wrong. And there's also going to have to be a very, very big place for people that just try and extricate themselves from the system as much as they can, building up their own alliances, their own communities, relying on each other rather than relying on the state, which is that's just becoming exactly more right. and more antagonistic.
You know,
so,
I think that's I used to do a homeless run in Brisbane, and people used to say to me, I'll go and get all the government grants that the Sallys get and the St. Vinny's. And I said, listen, the Salvation Army have to give out needles and condoms. You'll never catch an Orthodox priest giving out clean needles and condoms, even though you can make the medical argument that it is a good thing to do. I understand the argument. But if you take a government grant with a homeless run on the streets... you have to attend to the secular needs of the people as well. And I wasn't willing to do that, so we were 100% private funded. So there's an example. When you put your hand in the till with the government, they're going to come back and say, now vaccinate your kids. Now do this, do that.
Yep.
You know, you have to marry these two homosexual men. You're not allowed to speak publicly against. If you have any obligation to the government, you're gone. And Christians have got to get out of that in these days.
Yeah, agreed, agreed. We'll be back with more of Bishop Gregory's views on the state of modern Australia after this quick break here on TNT Radio's The George Christensen Show.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
I'm just tired of all the rigmarole, so we're going to do something fun. We have an El Nino year, right? Hey, let's link it up with the weather. Now, what's the most popular sport in the world? Well, in Australia, in the UK, and the United States, it's football. Of course, in the United States, football is played differently from football in the UK and Australia. See, even I know that. However, here is what you do. I'm going to give you the list of El Nino years since 1965. I want you to go back and look at your favorite football team, be it US, UK, or Australia. And looking at all those years, I want you to figure out how many wins they're going to have between now and the end of this year, okay? So here you have 1965, 68, 69, 72, 76, 77, 82, 86, 87, 91, 94, 97, 2002, 2004, 2006, 2009, 2015, 2019. So go to those years, look at what your favorite team did in those years, and see if you can show skill using the El Nino. It's all about correlation, not necessarily causation, right? Because they play that game with CO2. See how I linked that in? This is TNT Climate and Weather Watchdog meteorologist Joe Vestardi asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you've got.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
At the World Economic Forum's 2018 annual meeting in Davos, globalist stakeholders plotted to advance a program for user-centric digital identities. This global problem is well underway, but the mainstream media fails to report it. Klaus Schwab's World Economic Forum claims digital identities are urgently needed, otherwise citizens and consumers may miss out on the opportunities of the fourth industrial revolution. In reality, the globalist program of digital identities would create an Orwellian dystopia, where oppressive governments backed by multinational corporations could track and monitor every transaction that we make. The World Bank's October 2019 Identification for Development Practitioners Guide states, "Digital ID and payments platforms provide the means to move towards a cashless society. Will the bank accounts of those opposing this tyranny be frozen?"
Without CO2, the world stops breathing. CO2 sustains all life on Earth. Government, the WEF, and the elite believe humans are the carbon they really want to be rid of. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio. George Christensen on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to this discussion with Bishop Gregory Scully of the Western Orthodox Church. I'm George Christensen. This is the George Christensen Show here on TNT Radio. Now, you spent so much time in the desert. We've talked briefly about your interactions with the indigenous community, with the Aboriginal people out there in South Australia and outback South Australia around the Coober Pedy region. I'm sure that you have an opinion, as most people are developing one or already have one, on this proposed and so-called Indigenous voice to the Australian Parliament. What do you think about this proposal by the Labor government to change the constitution, to have this constitutionally enshrined body, organisation, chamber, I don't know what you'd like to call it, set up that is going to sit alongside the legislature, that's going to inform the legislature, advise the legislature, review what the legislature does, and also review, advise, and inform what the executive branch of the government does. I think it's all quite extraordinary. What are your thoughts, Bishop Scully?
You know, George, under the Westminster system, this would be unique in the world. This is giving a race and a minority of people a power in the Constitution that has never existed in the parliamentary system before. When we elect a member, a local member, he is our representative. He represents our area, his constituents, and he is our voice to Parliament. And to add to that for one race only, even as important as the Indigenous are, this will create an imbalance of race, as Tony Abbott says, that just should not be there. So I don't agree at all, but I love the Indigenous, and I know that so much needs to be done, but I do not believe this is the answer.
Well, you would have seen the living conditions of many Indigenous people out there in those lands around the Coober Pedy region. I guess that a lot are living in semi-tribal existence. Certainly, it's been likened to third world living conditions in some places in South Australia and in the Northern Territory and also Queensland, New South Wales and Western Australia, for that matter. You know, when you get into the outback, there's not too many services that are available. It's not too much to do. Obviously, the demon drink is there, and so idle hands and all of that. But do you think that this voice will in any way fix the lives or change the lives for the better of those people living around that Coober Pedy region?
No, I don't. And I don't think it'll help Alice Springs or Tennant Creek either. The issues are so different. You know, most Indigenous women are in jail for assaulting their husbands after not being able to put up with being beat anymore. They were beat for so many years that they explode. So many Indigenous males are in hospital for assaults against Indigenous women. The culture is so in trouble and needs so much help. You mentioned the operative word at the opening of your statement when you said tribal. The problem we have is we have 2,000 years of developing governments, 1,000 years since the 1066. They don't have that. They don't have it. And in the desert, 50 years ago, they were still walking around with loincloths. You know, there are Indigenous elders in the outback that remember the days when they just all lived in the desert, you know, before the atomic bomb tests. We have tried to take an ancient people of this land, and drag them into the 21st century, and they've not had the time to assimilate. And in the meantime, their culture has been overtrodden and ignored, and, you know, it's just got to be start from the beginning and do it properly. No ancient Christian missionary missioned the countries, old world countries, the way that Christianity was missioned in this country, I can tell you now. And taking children because they're half white. When you say they live in abject poverty, this is the way poverty is, forgive me, is a Western term, because when you have land, when you have water, when you have red meat like kangaroos and other wallabies, you don't think in the terms of poverty. Sleeping under a tree or in a creek bed has been natural for this community for thousands of years. And trying to then say, oh, you should all be in homes, he will build your homes. And then people get angry at them when the indigenous people don't treat the homes that we would treat them, you know? And so then you get anger. You get the white fellow saying, oh, we spent so much money, but then you get the indigenous who are not getting longer years on the earth. They're still dying early. Chlamydia and gonorrhea are rife amongst the young women, young, and I'm saying young, presenting in medical centres with sexually transmitted diseases. Basically, we've failed. We have failed, but the voice is not the answer. We should listen to the senator from Alice, is it Jacinta? We should listen to the wise ones who know what they're speaking about, who see the women getting assaulted every day of the week, just like I did. It breaks your heart. But just throwing money at it isn't going to solve it. We've dragged this ancient people into the 20th century, and they weren't ready for it, and now they're rebelling against it. And I can't blame them, I can't blame them. But this is not the answer. The voice, in my opinion, is not the answer.
Yeah, well, look, I think that you're right on that. I mean, the fact is, we have had a system that really hasn't changed for a long time. We've gone from what people may have seen as some form of racist paternalism back in the day to now a form of liberal paternalism, and nothing has changed. It's just the approach of government knows best. So big government gets involved, big schemes that are dreamt up by Canberra, or even, dare I say, by land councils that are still removed somewhat from the from the everyday experiences of Indigenous people that live in these remote communities, and they throw a lot of money. I've got to fact check this, but I saw a figure the other day, and it on the one hand, it was unbelievable. On the other hand, I thought I probably can actually believe that. At least about $45,000 is spent per Aboriginal Australian. Now, that is an extraordinary figure. And you're right. Well, like, what is there to show for it? It almost seems to me, forget all the programs, just give them a check at the start of the month, start of the year, and away we go. I mean, that they might be leading better lives like that. I don't know. But something obviously needs to change, and the answer is not more of the same. And the voice will just be more of the same. What it will be is a bunch of people meeting in Canberra, talking about it and recommending to government to throw more money at the problem, which just has not worked. It has not worked.
I'm
with you on that.
Given dignity. I believe they need to be given their dignity back. Dignity means self-determination. There are clear Indigenous lands that they can prove they've lived on. They still live on. Their ancestors have lived on. We don't use it other than it's a large cattle station or it's a mining property in the bush. Let the Indigenous decide. When the mine comes in, then support the community the way they are. In New Zealand, the Maori were given fishing rights on the coastal properties. Now, some of the tribes squandered the goodwill of the New Zealand Pākehā, the whites. But other tribes, like the Taranaki, man, they send their young people to university, they educate them, they're coming back as lawyers and doctors, got fishing fleets, come on. give these people the opportunity. The problem is our culture has not looked at them as humans the same as we are humans. Well, they are. You look at the football field. They're as good, as strong, as hard as anyone else. Look at the boxing realms. Look at the running, the track and field. You know, come on. These people can achieve as much as anyone else if they're given the opportunity. I just think we've jumped a step. Self-determination was given to the Maori in New Zealand. Now, some people might disagree with the Treaty of Waitangi, but self-determination was given to them, and they have excelled. Now, yes, there's still anger. Yes, there'll always be anger. The allegations, you stole our land, you did this, you did that. Reparations, there's always going to be the angry people that ask. But by and large, the majority of our Indigenous brothers and sisters are not those loudmouth people. They just want to live their life with the children being healthy, going to school, not being assaulted at home, not ending up in jail every 5 minutes. Why do we need to treat the Indigenous the way we treat white people? We've had prisons, what, for 600-700 years? We never had prisons in the days of the Romans. If you committed a crime there, what was the crime of the two thieves opposite Christ? Stealing. So, the Indigenous used to deal with their youth through a spear through the thigh. Now, okay, I'm not saying we go around letting them shoot. No, but the trouble is we've skipped a step. We've skipped a step and we've said go from tribal groups come into the 21st century, and we've just missed it. We've got to give them self-determination and let them grow into that as a community. In my opinion, I can't solve this, but I'm just giving my two cents,
And look, to an extent, I agree with you there. I think that the idea of self-determination, though, again, as I said, we went from this sort of racist or racialist paternalism approach originally to one that's very much a liberal paternalist or progressivist paternalist approach, where they're viewed Aboriginal people by the left largely as this homogenous entity. And true self-determination comes down to the individual. And I think that is part of the problem, that they are looked at as this like amorphous blob that are they Aboriginal people. Well, no, it's not they Aboriginal people.
It is
individual Aboriginal peoples that make up these communities. And, one of the things that's applauded is native title in this country. And I got to say, I think native title caused many, many problems, mostly actually for the Indigenous people, because they won this sort of spurious notion that they had some title over the land, but the title enables them to do nothing, Bishop Gregory, absolutely
right.
Nothing. They can't set up a shop. They can't set up any enterprise.
They can't refuse a mining company. You know, they get the money from it, but they can't refuse it.
But more than that, in terms of their own... Yep, go on.
I'm sitting here in the Mossvale Barrel area. My sister attended a function today where the hoity-toity said, well, we're not going to have Housing Commission come into our area and build houses. Albo wants to build. You know, they obviously want to bring in the Labor voters. But can you imagine, we're trying to tell an Indigenous community how they should live. They're an Indigenous community. They are a tribal community. They're family orientated. The white people are not the same as the black fellas. It's as simple as that. And we've got to let them grow, and we've got to let them have self-determination. Their elders have to have respect in their community. When we enter the land, we should be showing respect to them. You talk about $46,000 spent per Aboriginal. I can tell you most of that will be on the government workers that are around, the healthcare workers, the police, the fire.
No doubt.
I mean, the government workers in Cooper Pedy would take up most of that money. I'm telling you right now.
You see some of those rates that are charged out there. It's absolutely horrendous. Criminal. But if they don't pay those rates, they don't get people to go out to those communities.
Well, I'll tell you now, they're closing. The white community are leaving these towns, and you're not going to stop it because you've got angry blackfellas, because they've not been given self-determination. They've not been given the respect. You know, if I go to any community and I meet the community leaders of that community, they have respect within their community. But outside, they're not given that same respect by those who are supposed to be helping them. You know, they're not asking the reasons why these things are happening. It's not as simple as saying, put a lid on the grog, you know. It's not. America tried to ban alcohol, George, okay, in the 1920s. Yeah. I can tell you now,
it worked
super peaty. You could buy a case of beer for $30 in Adelaide and it would hit the indigenous lands at $100 a case, okay?
So
if you filled your boot up with $2,000 worth of grog, one run, you'd have 6,000 to 8,000 cash in your hand from one drive from Adelaide up to Gangaroo. Okay?
Now, unbelievable. All right. Well, look, unfortunately, I'm going to have to crack it off there, Bishop Scully, because we're winding up for the hour. No, that's quite all right. Lots we could discuss. But God bless you. Thank you very much for... Yes.
Let me finish with one point. What is the most important treasure any country has? It's its children.
Yes.
What is the most important treasure the Indigenous community has? It's the children. We should not think of this as a problem. We should think of this as the precious children of this country.
Thank you very much, Bishop Scully, TNT Radio.